Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. The year is 1976. The album is Saturday Night Live. The cast, the artist, Dan Aykroyd, John Belushi, Chevy Chase, Jane Curtin, why can't I read what I just wrote? Garrett Morris. I started running out of space. Lorraine Newman. And who's the last one? Gilda Radner. I should know those by heart, right? But I have them written down very messily.
That's all right.
My guest is Jason C. Brown. Hi, Jason.
Hello.
Thank you for being here.
Happy to be here.
I don't normally do this ahead of when we talk about the album, but since I'm involved in the project, I'm gonna make an exception. You have a Kickstarter project.
Yes, we do.
And this is going to come out, special episode this Thursday. So when is the Kickstarter? How much time we got left?
After Thursday, you'll probably have 2 days left.
Mm.
So this will be good time to see where we're at, too.
Yeah, exactly right. So the mad rush to fund things is always in the last few days. So,
oh, yes. That's when everyone comes out of the woodwork.
Exactly right. So it's called Imaginary Friends. Will they find it if they just search Imaginary Friends on
Kickstarter? Yeah, if you go to Indiegogo and search Imaginary Friends from there, mm-hmm. You'll be able to find us.
I am the worst in the world. I'm in the project, and I said Kickstarter. God damn it. I funded the one thing I ever funded through Indiegogo, too, so you would think I deserve to be crucified. I'm sorry.
Not that bad.
But it is going to be a short film.
Yes.
You want to tell them a little bit about it?
So we are going to shoot a short film about a woman who is attempting to get rid of her imaginary friend.
Mm-hmm.
So she seeks professional help, mm-hmm. and that's our little story. So it's a great little story, and if you go online and look at you almost had me on it. If you look at our Indiegogo page, you can see a promo that we made for it, which we made a pseudo dating website, but instead of finding a date for you, they pair you with an imaginary friend.
Love it.
Imaginary friend, and that's what you appear in.
Yes, indeed. A very beardy me plays someone's imaginary nerd friend.
Yes, they do.
It was fun. That was a lot of fun. That was one of my favorite things to shoot. So let's get into this.
Yeah.
Now, we have done the album before, but I feel like I didn't really sink my teeth into it enough when we last did it. I'm going to ask you why you picked it in a second, but it starts out with a Coke ad. There's no joke.
No, it's a legitimate, hey, this have a Coke and a smile,
yeah,
kind of thing.
100%.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming that paid for the album getting produced, since this is only a year into the show's existence.
I'm guessing that that's some kind of tie-in with NBC,
yeah,
something to that effect.
Right.
But yeah, 30 seconds of a quick Coke ad that starts the album off.
I remember, like, a minute ago, right before we started listening to it, this is the second time I've listened to it. Mm-hmm. Why I didn't notice it the first time? I think my brain was like, I bet there was a joke that I missed. I must have been distracted.
Yeah.
And this time I'm like, there's no... No,
that's
and then I look on the back and it's straight up a Coke ad. Like,
yep,
it's, they have to credit them and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's just number one.
Yep.
These are your rebels. You're not ready for primetime players. You're badass 20 somethings.
And if you listen to the rest of the album, how can you think of a Coke person saying,
let's
put our name behind that?
Right.
When it's touching on all these crazy subjects of Fringe, this and that. It's insane.
A jam called Death Camp.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
Like, that's what Coke wants to back. That's amazing.
Yes.
Like, I mean, don't get me wrong, money speaks, so they knew, well, this show's doing well, so I guess we'll put it on whatever, but it's like...
Yeah.
That would be... It's equivalent to, like, Procter & Gamble saying, you know what, Funny or Die, you release your own movie, we'll put money behind it.
Here,
and then it's just like...
Someone reading a memo saying, oh, that Funny or Die is popular,
yeah,
with 100%. The kids. Let's get behind that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly... That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah.
So let's start out... I have the... I'm just going to grab it.
Yeah, please.
I'm
going
to grab it. So we're going to start... first of all, why'd you pick it?
What
was important about this album?
For me, growing up Saturday Night Live generation, my favorite movie of all time is The Blues Brothers.
Yeah.
And that's
awesome.
The Blues Brothers showed up mid-season, first season.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Belushi, Aykroyd, and then the name's just going on and on. And I love the sketch format and just everything that Saturday Night Live has meant for the last 40 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Did you read that, was it a Vanity Fair article? I feel like it was Judd Apatow researched it. It was just like this in-depth examination of the making of the Blues Brothers.
Yeah, with them in the blue paint on the...
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
So good.
I mean, it's
just the idea
so
they basically
phenomenal.
Had a line item for Coke for John Belushi. In the,
absolutely.
And, holy crap.
Yeah,
I recently rewatched it, and it really, like, after, I think it'd probably been 20 years since I'd seen it, it really is still so strong. I mean, it's Landis, so I mean, like, it's going to be strong.
Absolutely.
But, side note, is it your favorite Landis movie?
It is.
Yeah, it is.
It
okay.
Is, yeah.
It does. It's like, okay.
But many to choose from.
Of course. Absolutely.
I mean, I was lucky enough, I got to work with John Landis on an episode of Franklin and Bash, which was a dream come true.
Yeah, of course.
Actually,
it was.
I mean, and he's the kind of person who, he's so wonderful, and he loves to share stories on set, too.
Oh, my God.
And my one Blues Brothers story, I said, do you have a favorite scene from the movie that of the Blues Brothers? And he said, you know, we shot so many fun scenes, the mall, and so on. And he listed off a few.
Yeah.
But he said, but I do have a favorite line from the movie. And I'm like literally on the edge of my seat. I'm like, oh my God, what is it? What is it? And there's a moment when they go looking for band members and they get to Mrs. Tarantino's home.
Uh-huh.
They knock on the door and they have a conversation with them. And as they're leaving, she says, are you gentlemen the police? And Dan Aykroyd, as deadpan as ever, says, no, ma'am, we're musicians.
And that's his favorite line.
That's his favorite line of the entire movie.
I mean, to be fair, that is a study in deadpan, if nothing else. That
and that's that's how the movie works. Those two guys play everything straight as an arrow.
Oh, yeah.
So God. Good.
So much good stuff. And I mean, also pulling out, we're totally getting distracted by Blues Brothers, but like pulling these great performances out of people I wouldn't expect Aretha Franklin to be convincing anything.
Yeah.
Especially since she's got a reputation. But like, she's good. Great.
Phenomenal.
Great. Yes. Like, all obviously these singing like
non-actors who come into these roles. And the whole band, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
The band plays enormous roles in this. And none of these guys are actors. They're they're blues musicians. Mm-hmm. It's phenomenal.
Yeah. Oh, God. So, yeah, that's a good reason to like this album.
Yeah, I mean, that takes me back to all Saturday Night Live.
It is funny, though. Like, I mean, I feel like, obviously, all of these people have a mark on culture. A few people, I feel like, maybe underrated are, even though everybody knows who geniuses are, Garrett Morris and Jane Curtin. If you're going to pick any out of these group, I feel like they don't get enough play in terms of...
Not enough
because
credit.
Belushi died. I mean, that's a big thing, of course. Yeah. And then at the time, it was like a lot of people like to call it the Chevy Chase show because he was just so fucking huge.
Yep.
He could say, I mean, they have a whole song on here about Chevy Chase.
Literally praising Chevy Chase.
I'm just like, was this Lauren's
idea? Masturbatory thing in the entire world of how all the girls love Chevy.
Oh, I mean, it's a great song. And performed brilliantly.
Oh yeah,
by
the
all of
takeoff
them.
Of the 50s girl groups. Literally,
it's 100% perfect.
It's wonderful.
Well, let's go down the track listing.
Sure.
And we'll start. We'll just start with side A. We've got Gerald Ford, Chevy Chase playing Gerald Ford.
Chevy Chase playing Gerald Ford.
A physical bit on an audio album.
That's my first thing. I wrote down sight gags because how better to start it off when you can literally play the record and hear crashing in the background. Of him taking his pratfalls.
Yep.
I mean, it's quintessential, sight humor on a record.
And, I mean, what's funny is, like, I feel like it was put on there not even to make a comment on the fact that they're putting a sight gag. I feel like it's more like, no, we know this is familiar to people.
Exactly.
Like, this does feel like a committee album a bit, except for a few choices to me.
This is, definitely the choices of this album. You have to scratch your head at certain points. But when did this album actually come out?
76.
76.
Yeah. So, year after.
The year after it played. So everything's from season one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a moment where it's like, this was so popular, him playing Ford and doing the pratfalls.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, really for no reason. Like, I don't know that Gerald Ford
fell once or twice.
Yeah. But then that was it. They took it and ran with it. But this wasn't a time in Saturday Night where anyone dressed as anyone. He was just, there's Chevy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, no reruns or anything like that.
Right.
It's just people knew it from the first time it played, and this 100%. Is how you would hear it again.
Mm-hmm. You know? And it doesn't, unfortunately, I mean, Chevy Chase fucking broke his back for, like, almost literally for that.
Yeah.
And then it's like, we're going to put it on a fucking audio album. Enjoy.
Holy
hear
shit. Easel's crashing.
Uh-huh. Yep. And it's simple. I mean, that's what pulls people in. You know, again, it's something that you recognize. There are a few bits I'm pretty sure in here that maybe even, like, because I'm betting you're a bigger SNL fan, so you might be able to pick a few of these things out, maybe more from familiarity than I will.
A few.
So then the next one is that just the opening. We've got to know. It sounds like a custom opening for the album. Maybe.
Lily Tomlin was the host twice in season... She was the host.
Oh, that's right. So she is in that. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
So she hosted the sixth episode of the season.
Okay.
And then she was the season premiere host of season two.
Oh, okay,
so this
okay.
comes off season one.
All
right. But listening to Lily, it's funny because it almost sounds like she, like, takes out a notebook at one point and starts reading. It almost sounds like she's doing, like, a Stephen Wright type thing where she's listing off, like, these jokes. She says, you know, have you ever actually seen someone laughing all the way to the bank? And it's just these little, like, that's the joke. There it is. Followed up by, you know, something about, like, why don't the tops of your feet have a name or
something. That's 100%
like
that's
just like four or five just one-liners right in a row. Just
not what she's known for like a brilliant actress who by all accounts is still like putting in Academy Award worthy shit like apparently it's a new one called Grandma or Grandmother apparently it's brilliant
and I'm thinking to myself she should host SNL she did it 40 years ago I mean it would be huge.
I agree. I will I'll email her assistant and tell her right now.
Perfect.
Again, soft yes. I'll just say that. Soft yes on Lily Tomlin. That might happen. But yeah, that is a great, like, it's called a monologue, but, like, it really is just her being goofy as shit. Like, really weird.
Totally.
We got some wonderful Don Pardo moments where he's giving us some segues, appropriately enough.
Yeah.
Then, the next one, the next one is a commercial for Speed.
So first you get a commercial for Coke.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Yeah.
That's a legit commercial. Then you get a commercial for Speed. Just gonna go drugs right off the bat.
So fucking good too. Yeah. It's just like, and it's just again played totally like you know, it's a little smiley obviously, but it's like for the most part, it's just like, no, here's what you need. Yeah. You don't even need a prescription.
If you have a lot to do, go to your mom's prescription. Yeah,
that's
your
neighbor,
your college roommate, whoever's prescription you get your hands on, just get some Speed.
Oh, it's so good. And it, I mean, it does make me want to rewatch a lot of these too, which because I know I've seen Speed, but I don't remember like who's doing what.
Yeah, that, I was in the same boat when I listened to it. I was like, oh, I remember that, but some of the cadence of going through, just hysterical.
Next, we've got Bedtime Story, which is a really goofy, like...
Yes.
Like, here's the one thing that I feel like... I love SNL.
Yes.
Okay? But we are dealing with, I think, maybe at their oldest, these people were 26, 27, right?
Yeah.
At the time. So some of these are just silly fucking like,
yeah,
this worked on Second Stage. Let's fuck your Second City. Let's just do it.
Yep.
They're
this
goofy.
One
they're
struck
simple.
Me as just completely innocent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Gilda gets to play a little kid.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
And this is where they can all play. They can all just, they could just play.
Yeah.
You
establishing
know?
Herself as this escapist. Like, she's so good at that. Like,
yeah.
Obviously died too young, but also didn't get the movie career she could have had.
Yeah.
That's upsetting. That's always upset me.
Yeah.
Did you ever read Gene Wilder's autobiography?
I haven't.
Oh, it's
on
so
my list.
Fucking good.
Yeah,
like, if
it.
You want a look into her life,
yeah,
read his autobiography. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Phenomenal, I'm sure.
She's nuts. She was nuts, but like, love of his life, of course, but like him detailing her interesting craziness and like the shit they had to deal with together, and then eventually like her coming to grips with being a person. Like, it's so like, you know, there's so much
and
in
through
there.
His voice,
yes.
Oh,
and then also if you have the audiobook, literally his voice, and that's the
cool.
Most. Oh my god, it's just so, I love Gene Wilder beyond everything.
Yeah.
But again, her as well, and like again, totally underrated.
Ugh.
Don't change the name of Gilda's. I don't know if they've already changed the name of those, but stop doing that. They were going to change the name of Gilda's. I've already forgotten the name of it. Her cancer charity. They're going to start changing the name. Okay, so
don't do that.
No, exactly.
That's
but
a terrible
basically,
idea.
It's the bedtime story is Dan Aykroyd is her father telling her a story.
He's a mechanic.
It's from the perspective of a mechanic, and she keeps asking, "Is there a fairy? Is there a this? Is there a that?" He's like, "Yeah, you and like."
Yeah.
That none of them makes sense either, I don't think. Yeah, sure.
He starts incorporating. My favorite one is where she says, was there a witch? And he says, I used the wench to get out the ball bearings.
Right. And, you know, and it's got a good tag. I don't know if I put this, because we always do clips in the first time we've done an album, not the second time, just so I'm not overusing stuff legally, right? But either way, the punch is... She says she actually says, "Well, don't you need to blob?" I don't remember the joke, but it's like it's a technical joke about mechanics, and it's fantastic.
Yep.
Then we got another segue, but
Don Pardo.
And who, by the way, like Don Pardo's got a special place in my heart for this, and for doing it till he was like 90, literally
90.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
blew out his candles on the show.
So fucking crazy.
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
Amazing.
And then also, obviously, Weird Al's lost in Jeopardy. I lost on Jeopardy. And that's another special place. Because he was, at this time, he might have still been doing Jeopardy.
True.
Then Shimmer, which I've already forgot. I just listened to it. What was Shimmer?
Shimmer is the track where it's a commercial.
Mm-hmm.
We go back to commercials again. And this is a product that cleans your floor
That's right.
As well as tops your food.
Oh, God.
And its tagline is, "The greatest shine you've ever tasted."
I really thought that was fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, the whole time, just like, there are these sentences that are built upon... speaking about the assets of both.
Yes.
And there's
as
just
a,
like
a
so
cleaning
twisted.
Product and a dessert topping, basically.
Do you have a, I mean, before we do more, do you have a favorite on this whole album?
The one, you know, I've got to go to the Weekend Update stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that, once you flip to side B, the first five tracks on side B are just the greatest Weekend Updates of all of season
one.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's just so good.
You can hear, we'll get into the details, but yeah, I was curious what your favorite stuff is. And honestly, that is the stuff that kept me most riveted, as much as I love the commercials, which usually are my favorite kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's a really great gun control bit after this. I'd forgot. I have seen this one. I know I've seen this one. But the whole time, Chevy Chase... Jane Curtin wants to propose to Chevy Chase.
Yes.
She wants him to propose to her.
Yep.
Yeah, her, yeah. And he's just come back from a hunt, and it's just the dumbest, like...
Yep.
He shoots everything.
Everything.
On accident.
Everything.
Including her at the
end,
right?
And then himself.
And then himself, right.
John Belushi's deadpan line about the dog. I shot a rabbit. He was digging up your garden. She says, oh, that was a dog. John Belushi comes in and says, Mom, I think something's wrong with Skippy. Oh, he's just taking a nap. He goes, oh, I think the mailman's taking a nap in the front yard, too.
That's right. Oh, God. At least they, again, for the most part, picked ones that verbally worked very well or with perfect sound effects. Like, again, a gunshot.
A gunshot.
Very simple, translatable sound effect. then, okay, this one really got to me, the fondue sketch.
Yes, the first time we see Garrett Morse on the album.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's him... again, that actually it's like kind of historically interesting too, because the idea of Namibia being new, relatively new is
country.
Interesting. Yeah,
yeah.
And him doing, you know, as far as I can tell, a great accent.
Yep.
And it's also a really great snapshot of the 70s, because fondue pots were not just a thing; they were the thing.
If you were gonna get a present,
yeah, they were the fruitcake of the 70s. Like, fruitcake became your Christmas joke in the 80s and 90s. Yeah. But fuck, like, yeah, I guess
fondue.
Everybody
that was
obsessed.
It.
It's
that
so
was
fucking
it.
Funny. And he wants to
send your fondue sets to Namibia.
So fucking good. And again, like, Garrett Morse has always got this weird, sort of similar delivery each time. But there's something so powerful about him, and I can't explain it.
Yeah, he's one of a kind, man.
Do you, out of the whole cast, is there somebody who's you think stuck around in your life more, either because of their star being as big as they are, or just because you love their work the most?
Probably Aykroyd, then.
Yeah.
Probably Dan Aykroyd. And that's a testament to how long he's been doing it, and how, I don't know, he just keeps appearing in just greatness.
Yeah.
You know, from Blues Brothers then to Trading Places 80s to... You know, but even getting farther along, where you look at something like Gross Point Blank.
Yeah. Oh, God, so good in that.
Tommy Boy.
Yeah.
And things like that, where the guy just keeps showing up and just being amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, you know, so are you a big fan of Trading Places? Because if I can find the soundtrack on vinyl, we are doing an hour or two on that movie.
That sounds
because
good.
I fucking love that.
That sounds good.
One of my favorites of all time.
Yeah.
Beef jerky time. Let's see. Okay. The next one is so dumb. It is so stupid. And I didn't read. I didn't read who the other Brando was.
Yes.
But this is Dueling Brandos, starring John Belushi and Peter Boyle.
Peter Boyle.
Fucking great.
I mean,
so dumb.
Young Frankenstein himself.
Uh huh.
Doing Brando. Yep.
So stupid.
And it's all the Brando lines too. From, I mean, Streetcar.
Uh-huh.
From.
There's Last Tango in Paris.
Last Tango in Paris.
One of the creepiest lines from Last Tango in Paris.
Exactly. And then the random. They throw in the guys and dolls.
Yes.
Just
yeah.
Quick and dirty. Like right. Late at night.
What do they finish it on? I couldn't hear what
I
they were.
I think it's the end of Streetcar that
goes
into
okay.
the Stella.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, okay, of course it is. By the way, as a side note, our producer, Mike Warden, was wonderful in his production of Streetcar Named Desire. Nothing to do with anything. Oh my God, the next one's so filthy, and it really makes me called Anna Freud.
Yep.
Really makes me think of like the worst / best of National Lampoon stuff that they ever did, the creepiest, perviest
Absolutely.
Stuff.
How far can we take this with sexual innuendo?
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell you something.
Yeah.
Because I didn't remember this skit.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a quick search of Anna Freud, and of course the real Anna Freud comes up, so I had to be a little more specific, and there's a screen grab of this skit,
mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you that Lorraine Newman is sitting on Dan Aykroyd's lap.
Oh, Christ. Oh, God.
In the screen grab. Oh, and it just took it to a whole nother level
really
for me.
Does.
I went, oh, my God.
Yep.
Because now, the way he, the way Dan Aykroyd listens to the dream, knowing that she's now sitting on his lap,
takes it
even to much more of an extreme.
Uh-huh.
It's
and
so
it's a
bad.
Weird thing. I want to know if it was, I'm a big fan of mm-hmm. historical sketch comedy.
Yes.
But I want to know if it's just like, I'm reading Freud this week, I'll write a Freud sketch, or if there was some kind of, I mean, analysis was getting bigger and bigger in the 70s.
This was... I want to say it was called Women in Herstory.
Okay, okay.
I think that's how Jane Curtin introduces it.
Okay.
And I think that there were multiple skits of women in history.
That's perfect.
I think, where Jane introduces it, and it's, you know, a women's influence on history type thing. So there may have been two or three Women in Herstory skits that came about.
I was going to say, I hope it was written by a woman, but honestly, at this point, I still don't know how many. Where are the writing credits? Because, like, honestly, we... They were notorious for not having a lot of lady writers.
I believe they had a couple, for sure.
Here we go. Writers, Dan Aykroyd. Okay, we got an Anne Beats or Bates. See, again, not famous enough that I would know her name,
exactly.
Unfortunately. Marilyn Suzanne Miller, Rosie Schuster, three of them. Three people.
There you go.
Women out of, like, 15 fucking writers. Lorne Michaels listed as a writer. I keep forgetting that he ever actually made his own comedy. It weirds me out.
Yeah.
I think of him
Executive
as a producer.
Producer slash writer.
Yeah, exactly right. Okay. So we got... either way, Anna Freud, you guys just seek the album out, of course, but it's her describing a dream that may or may not, quote-unquote, be dirty. And... her father's getting way too interested in it. It's so disgusting.
It is.
Like, hilariously disgusting. Because, the audience is totally on board for it, too.
Oh,
and I'm just like, they're not like, oh, groaning
After
or anything.
After the intro from Jane Curtin, they are, they've bought in.
You know the thing about, weird, just a side note about current SNL, it creeps me out how much Jason Sudeikis reminds me of Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
And especially if he's doing like a Midwestern accent, fucking creeps me out.
Yeah.
But he's no relation. He's actually related to George Wendt.
George
Wendt,
of all people.
That's so fucking funny. Uncle, right? George Wendt is his uncle?
I believe so.
That's such a weird thing. I mean, it's not, I guess, but like...
Some kind of connect the dots type.
To be like a, you know, to be a big star yourself and be the nephew of, at least in the 80s, one of the biggest stars of all time.
Yeah, big television star.
Which, by the way, side note, side note related to this and related to George Wendt, I'm embarrassed to say, I just saw Fletch for the first time. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
But I got to say...
You admitted that on...
Yeah, there are a few. Every once in a while.
On audio.
I've never seen Rambo. I've never... Like, there are a few,
Rambo,
there are a few,
skip.
But they're
but
critical.
Fletch is a...
Ones
Fletch
where you think
a,
you know them.
Yeah.
You know?
Fletch is, in my opinion, the most quotable movie.
It's
I mean,
so
it
great.
Is... Chevy's comic timing in that movie
is
at peak.
But what
peak.
Shocked me, though, is like... I had not... Okay, the first time I ever saw Beverly Hills Cop, my wife introduced me to it 6 years ago. Okay?
Another
Weird,
classic.
Right? Another classic, but this feels like... Fletch... I'm so sorry we're going side note on this, but like... Chevy Chase. I think this is an entirely musical album. I have to listen to this. I don't know what it is. I got it for free.
Beautiful.
But Fletch feels like what Beverly Hills Cop might have... been if Stallone had actually starred in it like he was supposed to. It's not like it's funnier obviously than that, but it's drier than I expected at all. Everybody had been pitching it to me like it was represented to me as though it was Caddyshack with a detective. That is how it always felt, like it was this crazy whack, and it's wacky for sure, but it's like great acting by Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
Again, super quotable.
Yeah.
The Moon River scene, which I had seen before, plays off way better in context.
Yes.
Anyway, go see Fletch if you're a 35-year-old man like myself who's never seen Fletch before. I did
Must see.
Every once in a while. Like, you're given, you don't realize you haven't seen
That's one of the great things about comedy and film is that you'll never see it all.
No.
And someone can, and shows like this that expose you to things.
Sure.
Because going down the list, seeing. We spoke of Spike Jones and things like that.
Yeah.
And he's saying like, oh, if Spike Jones and then Chevy Chase and then, you know, more Amsterdam end up on the thing, whatever's next after that, I want to see what that is. If
exactly
I haven't heard
right.
of that, that's what I'm going for.
That's absolutely true. But you know, there's a culture out here that if I haven't seen a certain movie, I'm gonna get raked over the coals, man. I'm in a show called A Drinking Game where we do 80s movies, and if you haven't seen some 80s movies, my actor friends are gonna give me some shit. A lot of those actor friends are in imaginary friends. Just
that's
a side note, they have a lot of them.
That's true.
Okay, so let's go down to the next one, which is called Bees on Parade.
This
Paul Simon is our featured.
Is random.
Yeah. Yeah.
Completely random.
Mm-hmm.
It's a call. So this is from episode 2.
Yeah.
It's a callback to episode 1, where the bees perform.
Yeah. Yeah.
The bees come out again, and it's 45 seconds of Paul Simon saying, "Oh, sorry, we cut that skit. Last week's skit didn't work."
So fucking stupid. Like, I guess it's good because it's an audio sketch. That's
There's a lot of noise. We have 44 seconds to fill.
Right.
And we're going to fill it with Paul fucking Simon. We're putting his name on the album.
Yeah, that is true. That's another
bonus.
And
there he is.
That's a weird thing, too. Like, I guess you don't think, like, we'll up our cred a little bit by, hey, by the way. Although, because Carlin wasn't in any sketches, was he? So
I don't think so.
It wouldn't work to put him on here. Nothing
comes from episode 1 that I could
find. Yeah. It would be weird to put him on here.
Yeah.
Just like it also wouldn't work to put the Muppet Cavemen in the Stoner Cave, right? There's no dialogue to that, is there?
I don't think so.
Totally visual. So some of the more memorable or historical things on that show just wouldn't have made it on here. We're skipping now to side B.
Side B.
Real quick. All right. So side B.
Side B.
We're getting into your favorite part
of
the album.
Okay, so this is Weekend Update.
Yes.
This is 40 years of the Saturday Night Live staple.
Uh-huh.
And Chevy Chase is our host.
Yeah.
And this is the best of season one.
Mm-hmm.
Just spliced together, just his best one-liners, his best bits, and it's just perfectly constructed.
Yeah. I'm wondering how chopped up it was, because I couldn't tell, because
it's pretty seamless.
Yeah.
The opening, from what I found, comes from the 12th episode of the season. All through that are just splices, and then the Spud ad comes from season 6, which comes up second.
Yeah.
Then we're back to a different one, and then Emily Litella comes from season 10.
Yeah.
And then the News for the Hard of Hearing comes from season 5. So that whole section's all spliced together.
Wow.
Just of the best. And man, he hits on everything that you want him to hit on.
Is the Spud a totally standalone?
Yeah, I think so.
It's so perfect sounding. It's such a perfect mimic of an ad.
Absolutely.
I think there was a split second where I was like, oh no, okay.
Yeah.
Just the name,
and
obviously,
classic,
away. But
classic SNL beer parody, too, you know.
Have you seen it?
No, I don't think I have.
Okay, because I couldn't picture it, so I don't think I've seen it at all. Are there within the Weekend Update bits, are there some like favorite parts of yours?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, yeah.
I mean,
you've got
hits
so many notes. I want to make sure that you
I mean, I definitely, so right off the bat is he's on the phone, and it's, if you ever watch Whose Line Is It Anyway, whenever they do their newscaster segment, they always begin the news broadcast and they're talking to each other as if the cameras aren't rolling into it. And this is taken straight from Chevy, where he's on the phone talking to his wife, and he's letting her know that the truck driver may have seen her head in his lap. And he ends the conversation by saying, "Honey, it did not look like you were napping." So it begins, I mean, you tour de force right there before the news even starts, and then he hits you right with, "I'm Chevy Chase and you're not."
So good.
You know?
It's so good.
I mean, again, just the inflated Chevy Chase.
Yeah. Yeah.
And right there, him telling you, "I'm Chevy Chase and you're not."
Uh-huh.
You know? And then it goes right into Fidel Castro's pulling out of Angola, which a frustrated Angola had no comment.
So stupid. Fucking love it.
So perfect.
Yeah.
And he tells Nixon jokes, you know, which ends in the punchline, a Chinese dish called sweet and sour dick.
Yep.
I mean, it's one after another of these just perfect. I mean, he touches on birth control, Jimmy Hoffa getting murdered.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all over the map with just these perfect segues and just perfect punchlines.
Yeah.
He just delivers effortlessly.
And it makes me think whenever I hear something like this, I'm always like convinced, oh, this is the first time anybody ever parodied news. It's obviously not the case, but like, I want to know, this is definitely the template that everything's followed since.
Yeah.
Whether or not they're the first time to do it.
And Saturday Night Live generally hasn't changed that template within its own show. I mean, they found something that worked and doesn't matter who's behind that desk. It's the same.
Do you have a favorite period of Weekend Update?
Oh, man. That's a good question.
Because it's hard. I feel like there's some underrated periods, like, you know, and maybe some of that I didn't appreciate at the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I gave Colin Quinn a lot of shit, but I like Colin Quinn, so I would almost go back and maybe see if I was wrong. Yeah, I don't know.
Norm MacDonald through the OJ times was, I mean, as on point as you can be. Mm-hmm. And again, that's another guy. And I think he and Dennis Miller were a little more similar than people give him credit for, that those two guys had such a delivery with the news.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's almost like a Carson thing where sometimes the joke that falls flat ends up being the funnest
100%.
Of them all, and they can embrace that and have fun with that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's the other thing, too, is it's very like, well, I'm sitting here. There's no sketch unless I'm bringing in a character. So mm-hmm. it's going to be a dumb wordplay joke, usually.
Yeah.
Like, or it's just going to be a straight, like, feels like it's out of a 100 jokes for kids book. Mm-hmm. Like, it's fucking fantastic.
Yeah, and it can, and that's the thing, where it can go literally from some joke about racism to a pun or he does the doctor backwards joke which is like between like Jimmy Hoffa getting killed and you know something else and he does the joke that Dr. Backwards got killed because they couldn't understand him when he kept crying for pleh.
so
some of the writers are like, let's help backwards. Pleh. There you go. Put that on Weekend Update.
If I'd have heard that joke when I was like 10, I would have shit myself. Yeah. Like, I loved, it was, holy crap, a grown-ups being that dumb.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and like, there's a lot of glee in that.
Yeah.
And I love that spirit is, if nothing else.
And the delivery is, it doesn't matter where the joke is.
Oh, yeah.
It's with the same intent, they're all delivered the same.
These guys were masterful, especially Chevy Chase, at doing like deadpan, straight, maybe even serious.
Yeah.
Like, I can give you a serious face and say that joke, you know, and it's like, fuck, that's what sells it.
Yeah.
No wonder. I mean, no wonder he's got the ego. He's got, like, I would have that ego if people have been like, oh, yeah, you're a genius. You're a fucking, and again, you're probably 26. This is blowing my mind.
Yes,
they're all younger than me.
Ugh.
Each of these people.
By a lot.
Yeah, by a lot.
Yeah.
Fuck you guys. Anyway. Yeah. But yeah, now that I'm looking close. Yeah, right? good God. This cover is crazy, too, by the way. The cover is really... This is in good shape. I don't know where I got this, but this is in remarkable shape.
Fantastic,
But yeah, the cover is just them looking like a bunch of hip young things, which they were. Fucking Gilda Radner's face, she's making just the dumbest face. I fucking love it. On the back, there's a lot of good stuff happening, too. so... I feel like if there's one that stands... Okay, wait, what about Weatherman? Weatherman's not...
Belushi.
I'm not remembering it.
Belushi shows up Chevy says, well, here in New York, you know, March is in like a lion, out like a lamb.
Oh, yes, right. That's right, of course. Good God.
This is the classic Belushi just going off on a tangent on Weekend Update about... And at some point, he just starts pairing animals about in other countries.
Yeah.
Well, March is in like a wildebeest, out like an ant, or
at this one point, dumb false premise.
Yeah, and he just doesn't stop.
Yeah,
until Chevy has to start stopping him, and then he goes into his classic. What I'm imagining is him just flailing around and falling off of the set.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I didn't remember this exact skit, but I remember a few others where he does the, you know, excuse me.
Sure. Yeah, it's fucking great. And then the next one. Now the next one's called Emily Latella. Did she do the
yes.
bit? Okay, that's
so
right.
She, that so this is Gilda, and it was a regular bit, and they actually don't put in one of her taglines, which is, so Emily Latella is the counterpoint, basically.
Oh right, yeah. Okay,
so and this from what I've read is this is a public television and television stations had to offer up a counterpoint to whatever the opinion of the day was. So they did this as a parody of that. But unfortunately, Emily Latella would never understand things correctly. So in this one, she is she doesn't understand why we need to protect our natural resources instead of resources. And on other skits, such as there being too much violins on television, when she gets explained that, no, it's violence on television, it ends with her classic, never mind.
That's right.
And that doesn't make it into the album.
No,
she doesn't have a never mind on this one, but that's the famous Gilda character.
Which is the one? See, because in my brain, I forget this one. Mm-hmm. I think in favor of Roseanne.
That's who I thought this was.
Right.
To be honest, I thought that this was Roseanne. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's with the Roseanne. Dana has the much thicker accent.
And the hair, of course, amazing hair.
Oh, spectacular.
What is the one where they change it up and Jane Curtin's the other person and she just says, never mind.
Oh, yeah.
Bitch. And it's so fucking, gets the hugest laugh.
Yeah. Understandable. Well, Saturday Night Live was never afraid to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, switch the characters around or, you know, take that chance with everybody to put them in the other role or shoe on the other foot kind of stuff.
What's interesting, too, is like, I don't know what the original airtime of the show was when it came out. But
I think it was after Carson.
Yeah. Okay. So there we go.
So it would have been.
And Carson was after the news at that time, wasn't he? And so they still had standards and practices to deal with. So it's not like they didn't. I mean, they were pushing it, but like there's still some shit they couldn't do. But at least Chevy Chase could very heavily imply that he'd gotten a blowjob. Like,
absolutely.
You know, and there's that creativity is fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, the things they do with those limitations.
It's like a throwback to the 20s where the Hayes board says 100%. You can't do all this. Mm-hmm. And then this creativity of how we get away with that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure that goes on, too.
Yeah. The next one is one of my favorite bits, maybe just because it's so damn memorable.
Of all time.
The news for the Hard of Hearing.
Which they brought back for the 40th anniversary special because it's such a simple concept and so perfect.
What did you think of that special? Did you like it?
I did.
I enjoyed it. There's some, even the stuff like the sketches I'm not either familiar with or I was like, am I going to like this? They actually pulled it off pretty well.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
I was a little sad Eddie Murphy refused to do the Bill Cosby bit. That would have been fantastic. What are you doing, Eddie? Can we talk to Eddie Murphy for a second? Eddie, come back to stand up and ignore Bill Cosby.
One of your most
famous bits is making fun of Bill Cosby for being an asshole. Like, come on.
Come back to stand up.
Exactly right.
We miss you.
I think he could do it.
Oh, yeah.
Or at least do a really good I don't think a New Beverly Hills Cop would be good, but I'd be down for it. But either way, if you've never heard News for the Hard of Hearing, look it up.
Yeah.
It's Garrett Morris screaming at everything that Chevy Chase just said.
And it incorporates two jokes because it's that, and then Chevy ends it with the Generalissimo Francisco Franco as well.
Right.
Who is, if everyone's not aware, is still dead.
Yeah. So fucking fantastic. I love that. Let's see. Then we skip. Okay. I am embarrassed that it took me so long to get the joke on the next one.
On the knock-knock joke?
In general. But the entire joke of the whole bit, the uvula sketch, it took me way too long. Way too long.
I love that of all the skits of season one, this one ended up on the record.
Mm-hmm. It's so fucking strange.
It is so odd. Mm-hmm.
She's missing her uvula, or it's mostly not there, right? And maybe she was Chevy Chase's wife in the sketch. I don't know, but I had really fucking hilarious.
Yeah, I'd forgotten that one myself. that one is a child. I do not remember.
No. let's see. So moving. Okay, so the next one. What's really funny is this is striking me. It's called Jimmy Carter. It's Dan Aykroyd famously doing his Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy Carter impersonation.
Doing a wonderful job of it.
Mm-hmm.
I always forget the lusting in my heart thing. You always think of Peanuts, shit, Billy Beer. I have a can of Billy Beer in the next room.
Oh, there you go.
I found that in a trailer once. It's never been opened. I'm really afraid what would happen if I opened it. I
don't think you should.
I don't think I should either. but I keep forgetting that. There's a little bit of dirtiness that they get to play with Jimmy Carter, which is so funny. This whole thing is about
the classic political Saturday Night Live stuff, you know. The best is when he you know, the Democratic tradition of sexual performance in the White House. And then he goes through and then, you know, he hits the easy ones, but then he starts talking about the love life of Harry Truman.
That's right.
It just goes there.
It's really fantastic.
This one's so good.
Let's see. So we got Jimmy Carter, and then the next one is Chevy's Girls.
Oh, boy.
Which, that almost feels like one I could put on in its entirety at the end. It's so silly and ridiculous.
It is classic late 50s girl groups, 60s girl groups, and they are just... saying how much they love Chevy Chase.
I can't tell if it's performed live. Is it performed live, or is it like, was there
I'm
a track?
Sure.
It seems like maybe there are like a couple where like that might have been a misstep, but like even if it was live, I mean, that's impressive.
Yeah.
All good singers, you know.
And there's a couple other points to those first couple seasons where the girls just have amazing musical numbers.
But yeah, long story short, this is them singing and praising Chevy Chase.
Yes.
And his falling, of course.
Yes, and they mention all of his bits. Mm-hmm. Gerald Ford falling down, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. Every time he falls down, I fall for him. Things like that.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I'm trying to see who... It doesn't tell me... It does not tell me who wrote this. It would be really nice to know who wrote what.
It would.
My guess is not Chevy. I hope not Chevy Chase. Oh, who knows? Who knows?
You don't know. You don't know.
There. By the way, quick special musical material. I do keep forgetting Paul Schaefer, how involved he was in SNL so early on.
Great SNL. And Blues Brothers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Good point. Paul Schaefer, underrated actor. Wonderful in Spinal Tap.
Wonderful.
Come on. Kick me in the ass. So fucking fantastic. Next one is the one I referenced earlier, Fluckers.
Maybe one of the most memorable ones on the whole album, mm-hmm. Fluckers. That's some of the best jam money can buy.
And like they're going off, they're taking like a well-known commercial premise
yep.
that even anybody would recognize now, which is one reason why it still works.
Yep.
Of like the idea that with a name like Smuckers, it has to be good. Well, what's a worse name that yep. somehow then enhances the brand?
Yes. This name is so bad, it's got to be good, is their premise. That, well, you wouldn't name it something so bad if it was bad. I mean, it's so good, you could give it a bad name.
Mm-hmm.
This is the premise. And the bit itself, when I listened to it, the first thing I thought of was The Aristocrats.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see the movie?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so The Aristocrats... There's a line in the movie where someone says that Chevy Chase used to have parties, mm-hmm. aristocrats parties,
where
you would have to tell the joke for an hour.
Yeah.
Couldn't repeat anything, and you would just have to continue the joke and kind of just one-up the next person at the party.
Yeah.
And to me, this joke was just those guys sitting around going, all right, what's worse than Fluckers? Well, I came up with nose hair. Oh, what about you? Well, I'll take a death camp. Notice the barbed wire around the jar. And then it goes, and then, you know, Belushi comes in and he goes, hey, I got dog vomit and monkey pus. And then Chevy comes back around to... painful rectal itch. And it's just this one-upsmanship of the joke. Like, who can take it farther?
Yeah.
And again, back to like the, what can we get away with and take it as far as we can? And then Belushi will come back again with something like innocuous, like nuns and orphans.
Right.
And then it's the, well, what's so wrong with that? Oh, they're being eaten by rats. You know?
Yeah. What's fun, too, is like, even just about the line painful rectal itch, which is probably the funniest in there, is like you can get the reason it's, I mean, it's funny because nobody says the word rectal on TV.
No, why would they?
Like this is not in standards and practices. I can say it. It is a medical term, mm-hmm. you know, and it's one of those nice middle fingers to standards and practices.
Yeah.
Like this
you
is
can
the
get
thing
away
you
with
get
that.
Away with, you know,
and you can say that.
Fucking fantastic.
You can say that.
Well,
on
and
TV.
The funny thing too is they couldn't say itchy asshole, but they could say death camp anyway if they
yeah.
wanted. You can talk
sure.
about all the death and shit you want.
Absolutely.
I love those little bits
but
of rebellion.
You can pull from everywhere you can to just come up with nasty things.
Mm-hmm. I want to know. I don't know enough. What's interesting is like these people are so famous. I don't know enough about their training when I'm looking. I mean, Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd are big guys, but they just have these booming dad voices. And they're, again, younger than I am. And that's one of those weird things about listening. You think they're older than they are, but they're not.
You're 100% right.
You know?
You're 100% right.
And that's why they've always been able to play dudes of, like, a certain, like... Because, mm-hmm. again, I don't know how old Chevy Chase was when he did Fletch,
not sure.
but not far off from me. And, again, fuck you people. Fuck people with hair, number one. Can we get Jason's list of people who are annoying. If you have hair, that is a great sketch. The next one is my favorite sketch almost of all time, just in anything.
Yeah.
And it is, like,
yeah.
not for the sensitive of hearing. But you know what? It is. You should listen to it anyway, because it's really fantastic.
Two comic greats.
Yeah.
Sharing a stage.
Uh-huh.
Playing word association in a job interview.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, I would think, one of the top five SNL skits of all time.
Yeah. You know? Escalates so quickly.
Yeah.
But you don't expect them to go where they go.
Anywhere. Anywhere near, I don't think, either.
Mm-mm.
It's almost like a concert where, like, that first song hits so hard,
mm-hmm.
and then it comes back down, and then it ramps up farther than you ever thought it would go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the ending is like, what's interesting too is like, you don't know what the tag is going to be. Mm-hmm. And when you get after he's called him the things he's called him, when he's like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Like, it's like, he becomes apologetic and gives him 2 weeks off immediately after giving him
and
the
a raise. Yep.
And it's like, there are a lot of things it's saying. It's a complex sketch. It is not simple.
No, not at all. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
It's pretty incredible. It's one of the most famous skits of all time on SNL. And it's Richard Pryor, Chevy Chase, two guys who are literally peaking right then.
Yeah.
And the story of the skit is that when Lorne asked, this is from Richard's autobiography.
Oh, okay.
That when Lorne asked Richard Pryor to be on the show, he had some demands that went along with it.
Okay.
And first of all, NBC didn't want him on the show, and Lorne Michaels said, like, he famously has quit Saturday Night Live 1,000 times.
Sure, sure, sure.
Walk out because he had to have Richard Pryor.
Mm-hmm.
But Richard Pryor said, I'll do the show, but I'd like Paul Mooney to write with the group. And Paul Mooney is apparently responsible for that, because before NBC would take him on, they made Paul Mooney go through a quote-unquote interview process.
Okay.
And Paul took that and incorporated the Chevy.
That's tame for Paul Mooney, though. I'll give you that.
Oh,
that is some tame shit for Paul Mooney.
For him. Mm-hmm. But that was, apparently he was part of the package deal for Richard to be able to do it.
That makes sense. I mean, like, it'd be interesting to know, like, where, you know, it's your job to not tell everybody what you've written for people.
Yeah.
But Richard Pryor is easily the most downloaded. Anytime we do a Richard Pryor album, it's the most downloaded thing we do.
Yeah.
It's always interesting to know that there's somebody else that could be behind. I mean, obviously, there's this magnet, this magnetic guy on stage, but the material, you want to know where some of it came from, your favorite shit.
If you can find some of the Richard Pryor TV shows where it's Richard, Paul, Sondra Bernhard, and Robin Williams together.
Crazy.
Sharing a stage, it's
insane.
It's almost like your senses are like, wait, what? Like Robin Williams is those guys' age, you know?
Yeah.
Holding his own with Richard Pryor, it's amazing. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
It's amazing.
And then the ending is an ending. It's guess they pick Buck Henry to end it.
Yep.
For some reason, I don't know.
He hosted a lot.
Yeah. Simple ending.
But the ending that he gives is. I was so taken aback when I listened to it because it sounds like it's an end of the season type thing where he thanks the crew and he says, you know, the guys from holding the cue cards to the boom mics and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he ends it with, he goes, everyone here, every one of them, they're all gay.
Oh, that's right.
It's the perfect button on the album because everybody here, they're all gay. But you know what? They're normal people. They're just like you and me. And that's how the season ends. And that's how the album ends.
So fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
God.
That's what they went out on.
Mm-hmm. And a little bit, of course, a little bit of music and a little bit of Don Pardo to close it out. So
Don
it feels like an episode.
It does.
Sort of, you know.
It does, you know. An opening with Chevy falling down.
Mm-hmm.
A monologue, a commercial, a weekend update,
and
a finish. Good night, everybody.
Thankfully, missing my least favorite part of the show, which is the music, because I rarely ever go. I don't watch for the music. I know there have been some historical performances, don't get me wrong, but that's not what I'm there for. This is going to be almost more impossible than the others, because I'm always like, well, let's say somebody hasn't heard of this person or that person.
Mm-hmm.
You could count on people maybe not knowing now who Richard Pryor is. If there's a 16-year-old kid downloading this, he's like, I don't know who Richard Pryor is.
Mm-hmm.
SNL has been around for 40-plus years now. So it's almost impossible. But this is of a very specific cast.
Mm-hmm.
And while people have their favorite cast, it sounds like you are at least, you remain a fan and you're still interested in it.
Absolutely.
There are a lot of people who aren't like that. And I, at one point, was very picky and snotty about it. I'm trying to open my mind more. So to somebody who maybe doesn't have their mind open, maybe doesn't know enough about the early days of SNL, why listen to this album?
I think this is like this is one of those seeds that gets planted, I think, that you can listen to this album and hear things that if you watch Saturday Night Live when it premieres, you'll see elements of that from this album 40 years ago, which I think is the most amazing thing. And you get to see these pantheons of comedy who Chevy Chase, Dan Aykroyd, John Belushi performing, you know, literally this is their discovery.
Yeah.
This is how they got discovered by the world. The story is that as soon as the Chevy Chase, Richard Pryor, Word Association skit aired, the next week he was on the cover of New York Magazine saying the funniest man alive.
Wow.
I mean, that's how impactful.
Good God.
That just that skit says, I mean, that was it.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. So this is how these guys became, how you became a movie star.
Yeah.
Were these skits.
Yeah. And it still does that, but I got to say, like something like that, like you just, that example, that's not common. So
yeah.
It's probably more common again, since it's had a 40-year run so far.
Yeah.
That it's just been there for so many pieces of history and mm-hmm. made some of it itself.
Yeah.
Absolutely. even if you do shit on the new cast or whatever, do whatever you're going to do, have your opinions, but like you cannot deny the power of this mm-hmm. fucking show. And you're right. This is a great thing to listen to, because I don't know that they've ever released any other compilations like this.
Just the videos, you know? I think.
Yeah, just the videos, which don't get me wrong, are great, but this is an interesting experiment.
Yes.
To put some
TV on.
Taking
you through one episode, the best of the episodes of season one, where everyone was literally figuring out what the fuck are we doing.
Yeah.
You know, where it's here's the Muppets one night.
Right, right.
And here's and what you're doing with different guests and music and things like Paul Simon became a staple on there.
Sure.
In season one, I had no idea. Desi Arnaz hosted Saturday Night Live in season one. If you would have told me.
What the fuck?
If you would have given me a list of SNL hosts.
Yeah.
And Desi Arnaz would have been on there. He'd have been the first one I would have eliminated.
Yeah.
And he was a host in season one.
That's crazy.
He and his son, he was the host and the musical guest. He sang Cuban Pete.
Of course.
And Babaloo. I mean, I'm going to go home after this and go find footage of this. It has to exist somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Of Desi Arnaz hosting Saturday Night Live.
That's fantastic.
I mean, no idea.
That's awesome.
And that's the best thing about Saturday Night Live. You can still discover things about the show.
For sure.
That you never knew that'll surprise you and find these great characters that these guys came up with, you know.
I would love to find somebody who, and this was built for exactly this, who discovered the show through the album.
Yeah.
Who's flipping through album, didn't watch a lot of TV. Mm-hmm. They're like, what the fuck is this? I'll give this a listen. They're like, oh shit, I should watch. It has to have happened. It has to have worked.
Has to have happened.
Because this is not just a let's remember this show necessarily. It's a, no, listen to our show.
Yeah.
Give this a try.
It just started last year.
Yep, exactly.
Give this a try. There has to be someone out there who didn't stay up late on Saturday Night Live or Saturday night.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's not like it was their own money making it. We know that Coke probably had a big hand, oddly enough. It's so weird to me.
It's so weird.
Lorne Michaels, give us a call.
Yeah, we'd love to know the backstory of that.
Please fucking tell me what the hell's going on there, because that's just weird. So let's remind everybody, first of all, where they can find you online, but then also remind them about Imaginary Friends.
Imaginary Friends is on Indiegogo. You can search Imaginary Friends, or you can go to the website igg.me/@Imaginary Friends. And I'm on Twitter at Jason C. Brown, AD.
Perfect. Easy enough. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me, man. This was great.
A ton of fun. You're more than welcome back, of course.
I would love to come back.
I do not tell everybody
that. We'll find another album. We'll do American Hot Wax, even though it has nothing to do with comedy.
it'd be fun. And that, or again, if you can find the Trading Places soundtrack.
That's not a bad one, too.
Good God.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys for listening. Listen to this album. Please go donate on Indiegogo to Imaginary Friends. There's a lot of really good shit up there. A lot of good stuff you can get, including some original art, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If I'm not mistaken, T-shirts related to a drinking game that I'm in.
Correct.
Okay,
correct.
So go do that. I really want one of those shirts, so I got to go get one myself. Again, thank you for listening. And as always, have a good thing. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on facebook.com/comedyonvinyl, Twitter @comedyonvinyl, and find everything else at comedyonvinyl.com.